As far as we know, the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday parade will step off on Monday as scheduled, and the interfaith service will happen later today as well. Greetings again, I'm Adam Morgan. The celebration recognitions for the holiday honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. are on and will continue in spite of the weather. Rising Star Missionary Baptist Church will be hosting the interfaith service this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Among those receiving community recognitions after service are former Denver Mayor Michael Hancock and University of Colorado head football coach Deion Sanders. At 3 p.m. at the Jewish Community Center in Boulder County, they recognize the holiday with the theme, Fanning the Flames of the Dream. And on Monday, we celebrate the 40th anniversary of the largest march parade for Dr. King in America with the annual parade from the Dr. King Memorial in City Park along Colfax to Civic Center Park in downtown Denver. Make sure you are wrapped up and layered up well because of the wind chill should you plan to participate. This year is also the 60th anniversary of one of Dr. King's most prominent trips to Denver. After receiving the Time Magazine Man of the Year recognition for 1963, and just prior to being named to receive the Nobel Prize for Peace, Dr. King made a community consulting trip to Denver that we remember on this edition.
Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual.
On August 23, 1963, in Washington, D.C., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. includes the mention of Colorado in his I Have a Dream March on Washington address.
So let freedom ring. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado.
154 days later, he makes the first of his trips to Denver, arriving on United Airlines at Stapleton Airport. Dr. King's visit was not without controversy. Denver in 1964 was far more progressive in many respects than other eastern and especially southern communities. Denver sent money and people to support the movement and its actions in other parts of the country. The overriding issue in Denver at the time was public accommodations and housing in neighborhoods. Activists had been pushing a resistant Republican state legislature for fair and enforceable public accommodations laws and were demonstrating at the Capitol. Governor John Love disdained the demonstration and the demonstrators, so he did not find time on his schedule to meet with Dr. King. At the time, Sarah Foster owned a beauty shop in the Five Points community.
There was a group that really thought that he was the greatest guy alive, that he was doing a good job, and then there were those who, you know, wondered why didn't he stop.
The Denver Community Relations Commission sponsored Dr. King's trip with a contract for his services. However, Denver City Auditor Charles Byrne questioned the legality of the city's contract with the civil rights leader. He indicated the use of public funds for sectarian purposes was forbidden by the Colorado Constitution. However, Assistant City Attorney W.H. Van Duzer drafted a legal opinion that the contract was for Dr. King's personal services and not for any religious group for whom he might be associated. Seeking to ensure the visit, Denver City Council member Elvin Caldwell volunteered to cover the cost of the contract. However, the city attorney accepted the legal opinion. The contract for $200 was paid, and the trip was on. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. arrived in Denver on Friday, January 24th, some 2 hours later than planned due to weather en route. A press conference was relocated to Stapleton Airport, and a meeting with Mayor Kerrigan had to be canceled. Nonetheless, an evening event on the schedule was held.
I can remember Martin Luther King coming to Denver, and we had a dinner for him out at DU. And Reverend Howard was our minister, and I met Martin Luther King during that time. I was one of the hostesses, you know, for that dinner.
Anna Swain attended Shorter Community AME Church, which hosted a dinner at the University of Denver Student Union Building. Some 600 persons attended the $5 per plate event. The church pastor, the Reverend L. Sylvester Odom, served as Dr. King's Denver guide for the three-day trip.
You know, he came several times, and I was able to, I met him. But George Brown knew him, you know, had gotten to know him well. And so he had a breakfast meeting, and several of us were invited. And he was just speaking of many things, but seemed to be speaking to me to say, you should do this. I don't know what he said, but it seemed to me the words, if not directed to me, they were indirectly coming to me.
Rachel Knoll, inspired by Dr. King, became the first African-American elected to the Denver School Board. The breakfast she mentioned began the second day of his visit at the downtown Denver Hilton Hotel, sponsored by the Denver Community Relations Commission. Also that day, Dr. King's itinerary reached beyond Denver. That afternoon, he met with the Littleton Council for Human Relations at Grace Presbyterian Church. Just over 200 persons attended the meeting. The Littleton Council had been organized to prepare the city for the eventual arrival of African Americans and other minorities into its neighborhoods. A council spokesperson advised Dr. King that the council had been criticized for, quote, pushing too fast or causing dissension because the community wasn't ready. Dr. King commented to that criticism by saying, if you push at all, they'll say it's too fast. We don't have a long time to deal with this problem.
There's a new day coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes?
On Sunday, Dr. King preached at Macedonia Baptist Church and met with ministers at Montview Presbyterian Church in Park Hill. It was during this third day of his visit when he spoke to the largest audience on the trip. More than 3,000 filled every available room, chair, and standing room to hear him. Another 750 stood outside in the snow. Among them, a young preteen, Debbie Blair, was with her father, Omar Blair, who was destined to become the first African-American president of the Denver School Board.
I remember going to Montview Presbyterian Church with my dad to see him, and I was probably, 7th grade, thereabouts. And we had to get there early because there was lots of security. And the church was very big, and lots and lots of people there.
In his address, Dr. King posed a rhetorical question regarding progress in race relations by providing three answers. He stated, "The extreme optimists indicate America has made great strides, so we may now sit back and await the inevitable." He also said, the extreme pessimists say, we've made only minor strides in council. Do nothing, because integration is impossible. However, the best viewpoint, Dr. King indicated, was that we have a long, long way to go before the reality of brotherhood is realized in our nation.
It was a very multiracial crowd, as I remember it. Yes, there were lots of black leaders there. I mean, a lot of the black church leaders and certainly politicians of the time were all there, and was important for them to be there to support Dr. King.
Dr. King also told the crowd, we have broken through the Egypt of slavery, through the wasteland of segregation, and we now stand on the threshold of the promised land. He stated, the Negro has a great role to play. He must be willing, if necessary, to give his life in the battle, because if a man hasn't found something worth dying for, he's not fit to live. Rachel Knoll reflected on crossing paths with Dr. King.
But you see, the impact of Dr. King never left me. And when he died, and we had a meeting on the steps of the City and County building, somebody, and I wish I knew who it was, said that if you want to know what you can do to carry on Martin Luther King's work, if you believe in what he's doing, and I'm paraphrasing, if you're in an elected position where you can make an impact, you can make an impact, now's the time to do it. And I thought, I am. I'm one of seven people.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. departed Denver on United Airlines on Sunday evening, January 26th at 6 p.m. He returned to Denver again in 1967 to speak at the University of Denver against the Vietnam War. This time, he returned as a Nobel Prize winner for peace and the greatest leader for human rights America has ever known.
With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' cry. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true."
Interestingly, 40 years later, one week shy of the same weekend, Dr. King's son, Martin Luther King III, is in Denver. His toughest task is not to be seen as his father, but to share his dad's legacy.
Probably the most challenging is to figure out where my contribution is going to begin and not end up trying to do everything and end up not doing anything, if that makes sense. In other words, you can't be all things to all people. You must decide what it is that your calling is and really focus there. So for me, I live in a world of a man and a woman who are larger than life. And if I woke up every day trying to be Martin Luther King Jr., I would fail miserably. People say, "Well, hey, are you going to feel the? How can you feel the shoes of your father?" I can't. Don't even try to. But my objective is to be the best Martin King that I can be, which means that I can certainly take that legacy to the next level through technology, through exposing what he did and said to people all over the world, to understand there was a revolutionary side of Martin Luther King Jr., to understand that that he did have a blueprint and a plan, that if we embrace that blueprint and plan, that, because what I do believe ultimately is if we were embracing his plan, then we wouldn't have to worry about 45 million people who have no health insurance, because we wouldn't allow it. Not black people, all people. This is for all people. We wouldn't allow 35 million people to be without and live in poverty, because we would be living his dream. All I have to do is to get people to embrace his message. It's a huge task, but that's part of what I work on all the time.
I'm Adam Morgan. Do keep in touch, and many thanks to you as well for sharing a few moments of your Dr. King holiday weekend with us.